You're listening to Driving Law, a podcast by Kyla Lee about all things related to the rules of the road.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Driving Law. I am Kyla Lee at Acumen Law, and with me, my co-host, Paul Doroshenko.
Coming to you from Orlando, Florida.
I'm sorry that I missed the podcast last week. Well, I was preparing to come here for the DYDLA spring seminar. There's a lot I have to do in preparation, and because it's in Orlando, and I am a junkie who is addicted to theme parks.
Yes.
I had to come early.
Well, I know that you went to Disney World and you've had a good time there, and I'm glad to have filled in for you when you were unavailable or part of for the podcast.
Unavailable because I was doing all my legal work so that I wouldn't have to do legal work and could just ride rides.
Yes, there was that too. But it was such an eventful week in driving a lot that you missed like the best week ever. I was on Radio NL.
This week. It was like a week of ridiculous drivers.
I just said I'm in my element here because what do we have? We've got so many driving law cases.
But Paul, would you believe we have a crazy week of driving law this week too?
Well, we still have lots of driving law cases. And of course, there's all of these things that we've discussed here at the conference so far, the seminar so far, and there's still another day.
I got to play with the Intoxilizer 8000.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. So you've used basically every approved instrument that has ever existed out there. You've used the Intox ECIR2, the BAC Datamaster C, you own those.
Yeah.
You've used the Datamaster DMT, you've used the Intoxilizer 9000 and 8000.
Let's just be clear. I did not just use the Datamaster DMT. I beat Datamaster DMT.
Yes.
It's impervious to mouth alcohol.
Yes, you were you blew two mouth alcohol readings back to back, both times is by controlling your breath. You were watching it. You made it your bitch, and you got inaccurate readings.
Yeah,
so proud of you, Kyla.
My great list of accomplishments.
You've got more unreliable readings on a breath tester than any other person I've ever met.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's talk electric vehicles, Paul.
Yes, this is such a big story.
This is insane.
I was telling people here about it and their minds blown.
I feel like I deserve like credit for it because I saw the TikTok before the TikTok was viral.
Well, I've been following Edison Motors TikTok for the longest time because he's great. He explains things very well. It's a lot of fun. It's not just about the trucks, but of course they usually merit. And I'm interested in the trucks.
I held up on stitching him because there was that whole controversy a little while ago about whether they're made in Canada.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they've also called other people out who are selling Chinese-produced vehicles and branding them as made in Canada, and all they're doing is assembling them in Canada, and they're getting some sort of federal tax credit.
Yeah.
So he's actually doing the Lord's work, just as we are.
Yeah.
Keeping the system just.
Yeah.
But,
so Edison Motors applies for a government grant for producing electric vehicles made in British Columbia.
And Edison Motors, exists there in Merritt. They've been doing this for a while.
You know I've got a soft spot in my heart for Merritt.
They're not some sort of Ponzi scheme or some fraud or anything like that. They've got actually produced the things there.
They're playing fast and loose with the made in Canada.
Well, no, they're not. They're buying this stuff and really are assembling it from their own design. And they built a truck that is a dedicated logging truck for this purpose. And they're on to other vehicles too. And they show their technology all the way through. Of course, like these components, you're not going to find components that are necessarily made in Canada, right? And good luck with that one. They've assembled it and they built it and they're out there, trying to get other people to purchase the products and less motivated to get investors than they are to get people to buy because they want to keep it a BC thing.
Fair.
And they explain it well.
So what happens with Edison Motors, for anybody that's been living literally under a rock in British Columbia, is they apply for this government grant and they get an email after they apply for the grant from an MNP who is administering the grant program for the government. And they say, hey, saw your grant application, super cool, great for you, we're so happy for you. But also, did you know that we assist in writing grant applications and you could have us write a grant application for you? And we have like 90% success and we only take a measly little 20% of what you get for writing it for you. And like, basically, we're so good at this that you're for sure going to get the grant and then you'll pay us and we'll be happy.
Yes. So the people who are administering the grant for the government are also people who charge a service fee to assist people to write their grant application. That's what it comes down to. And you're thinking to yourself, how can this possibly be? How can such a conflict possibly exist? How does a private company have this job in the first place? And how did they get this contract? And how does the government not know that this is what is taking place? All of these things just like are mind-blowing. This is the type of thing, actually, that I have to say can bring a government down.
Well, I mean, this government is already like teetering because they've lost the support of the legal profession for whatever that's worth.
Doesn't matter to me. They haven't lost my support.
They've lost the support of the health professions.
That's true. They have lost the support of the health professions largely, but I have to say it would be worse and whoever's elected are not going to turn it around.
People are terrified about this, you know, phantom crime that's happening, random violent crime that's happening on the streets, and they know so little about constitutional responsibilities that they think that this is a provincial government issue.
Well, they blame any level of government. And
all government
doesn't matter.
Is not keeping us
it's
safe.
Usually just Justin Trudeau.
And specifically not keeping us safe from drug users. Sure. I don't want to go on a big segue.
I know, we could go off on that. I mean, the point is that, yes, although polls still put the NDP well out and people not really connecting that much with the NDP, that you're always potentially, you know, the one scandal away from losing power at the next election. And this is a pretty bad scandal because you're sitting there thinking to it, like, all our taxes are paid into it. Okay, we all feel that we've got an interest in it, although really, like, once the taxes go in, the courts have said that's the government's money and it's not your money and don't even think about it as your money. But you feel that you've got an interest in it because, you know, this money is supposed to be spent in British Columbia for the purpose of assisting British Columbian businesses that rightfully deserve it and apply for it. Mm-hmm. And that is the role of this, this full program.
Like a good profile that's done something that other companies haven't been able to do. It's a little shocking that they didn't get a grant.
And apparently the only company. They are the only company in British Columbia doing this. It's not just that they are a good company. They are the only company. And they're like young people, innovative, getting out there trying
and
to do this.
Merit.
And they're in Merritt, which we have a connection to. I know, I messaged them at some point and said, look, I own a piece of land in Merritt.
Think about what Merritt's been through. Merritt got flooded. Merritt gets fires. Like, Merritt has gotten the short end of the stick. Merritt's hospital has had so many closures. Like, if you want to make the people of Merritt happy, and I know it's not a huge voting base, but if you want to make the people of Merritt happy, give the fucking boys a grant.
We have a long connection with Merritt, both Kyla and I, for
totally
various reasons. As soon as I get over the hill into the Nicola Valley, my heart fills with joy every time because I like Merritt so much. But yes, Merritt is one of those issues. They are an interior company. We're not talking about investing in the Lower Mainland or Surrey or Abbotsford or something like that. We're talking about investing in Merritt to produce logging trucks.
Yeah, and they neglect like the power that Merritt holds. Like, Merritt itself holds a lot of power provincially in respect of driving.
Oh.
Yes, because as you know, The Highway Patrol,
the hours are long and the pay is low.
I knew as soon as I said that, this was where it was going to go.
Gonna do my best to keep you driving slow.
They stopped their enforcement at the tunnel. And then it's Merritt RCMP and the
BC Highway Patrol.
BC Highway Patrol Central Okanagan. That's operated out of Merritt, that patrols the rest of the Coquihalla up until the Kelowna connector. So it's a big deal for traffic enforcement on very critical infrastructure in this province. Not only that, but Merritt itself is very critical as a highway destination, because you cannot, if you do not have an electric vehicle, you cannot get from Chilliwack past Merritt without stopping for a tank of gas. And if you have an electric vehicle, you can't get past Chilliwack without stopping for a charge in Merritt. So Merritt is in fact itself an essential destination on that roadway.
I'm just so passionate about Merritt, and so are you.
Yeah.
Well, one more thing we have in common on the Driving Law podcast, but getting back to Edison Motors.
Edison Motors.
We're thinking about the conflict, right? When there's an apparent conflict, and you're before lawyer. A judge or a lawyer, mm-hmm. Just the perception, the smell of the potential for a conflict, mm-hmm. One has to back out. That's not always the case with tribunals, but it is the case with lawyers, and it is the case with the court.
Yep.
And here we've got the company who's distributing them the grants, who's making the decisions on it, contracted by the government, paid by the government, paid to do their job lawfully and ethically, is then approaching the companies that are the ones who would be interested in getting the grants and saying, we'll charge you. And I think that the amount was $200,000.
Well, it depends on how much you get. It's a percentage. I know, but it was
up to $200,000. It's up to $1 million, and they wanted 20% to write the grant. And they wrote their own grant, Edison Motors did, and submitted it. And lo and behold, they didn't get it because the company that's reviewing
Well,
I think
the allegation is
that's the perception. That's the perception. Yeah. And that is, I think, is
the, and that's why the video went viral.
That is more or less the nub of it. Yeah. So what was Rob Shaw's article about? Was that about it, or because that
I don't know, but
some discussion with that.
Yeah. So what happened was initially these guys went to the government and they said, yo, this is a big problem. Like, we discovered this. You should be concerned about this because we perceive that we didn't get a fair shake. And why are you having the same company that administers grants decide who gets the grants?
Well, not only that, they'd apparently been to the legislature.
They'd been to the legislature.
And met with the MLAs, met with the ministers to talk about this.
And the government, like, shut them down. They were like, nope, there's no problem here. And then they posted this video saying, how can there possibly not be a reason to at least just investigate? Give us the peace of mind, right? And
they were very fair in their video, too. They blocked out the names of things.
They didn't say who the minister was.
No.
And then the government responded and was like, no, there's no issue here. We're not going to do an investigation. We're not going to do anything. Fast forward like 40 hours.
Not 48?
No.
Exactly.
Less 40. Than 2 days. Okay. Yeah, like 40 hours. And the government says, oh, new information came to light over the weekend, which is kind of like, actually, there is an investigation, but it's like an off-the-books investigation admission, you know?
Yes.
And we're referring to this to the Auditor General.
Yes. Well, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with it now. But I had no idea that any private organizations were involved in the granting process.
Paul, remember the legislature spending scandal, the Plekis report?
Yes.
The Auditor General did a report and they were like, holy shit, this is big bad news. And then people got charged criminally?
Yes.
And convicted?
Yes.
And sentenced?
Yes. But there was so much more to that that never got out that I've learned about over the course of my time engaging with the government. That just
never be allowed to discuss
it. Well, some of it I am allowed to discuss, but nobody's asking me. Mm-hmm. But it was disturbing to see that.
But that's probably, maybe, possibly, if the Auditor General produces a report that says that there was some sort of fraud, there's going to be criminal charges.
Yes, and that is entirely possible, and that is a good point.
Criminal charges against a corporation.
Well, there's that too, which is always fascinating. The big issue will be whether or not there's some sort of corruption in the government. And by corruption, I'm using that very loosely. In other words, if some government official knew that this company did this at the same time they were doing this, or even if they like failed to notify this company that you can't be, on the one hand, selling the service of giving of assisting people with grants, while at the same time we are giving you this quasi-judicial job of passing out grants. That oversight in itself is shameful, if in fact that it happened. And again, I'm being speculating about where this thing could go. But, you know, if there's a minister involved, if there's a deputy minister involved, if there's anybody's, if this company has any connection to the NDP. Now, companies have connections to governing parties. We know that. That is very common, particularly for marketing companies. You and I own a marketing company. We don't have any connection to the government. That's why our marketing company is small and will ever forever be small, because we don't want it to be large.
Hey, now David Eby follows me on Twitter.
Yeah. I think he may have followed me on Twitter. I don't know.
He's probably unfollowed me by now, let's be honest.
Yeah. Okay. But in any event, the point here is that they do have their own marketing companies. They've got their own consulting firms that they use, and they are really party specific for the most part. Some companies will have a few employees, the higher ranking people who have connections with one party, and then the other high ranking person has connections with the other party in order for them to have opportunities. But they know that these things, especially promotional things, are not subject really to the same scrutiny when it comes to assessing them for government contracts, because it's messaging and the government's entitled to decide on its messaging. But This is different.
This could potentially be criminal. So we are watching it on the Driving Law Podcast.
Very closely. Totally driving.
Yeah.
Totally driving, because it's a truck manufacturer.
How cool. Driving Law drives the law.
Driving Law does drive the law.
All right.
Was I the one who came up? I did say that to you. Yes, I did. I told you years ago, Driving Law drives the law.
No.
And I explained why.
No, that's why I started this podcast.
Well, I explained to you the essence behind it early on in your career when I told you.
And I
refined
it with a phrase.
Distilled it down.
Yes. The next thing I want to talk about is kind of a sad topic.
Oh, it's very sad.
So as we've talked about in the past, there was a court case going on in British Columbia involving a driver of a high-end car that...
McLaren or something like that?
Yeah, I can't remember what. But ran a red light in front of the courthouse in downtown Vancouver in the middle of the day and crashed.
Devastating news story on the day it happened.
Yeah, yeah. Killing a baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
Horrible situation, and
badly injuring the father.
Terrible for the family, you know, terrible for the community, and also terrible for the police officers who have to investigate. It's the type of thing that leaves you with PTSD.
Yeah.
And there's so many officers we know, or, you know, can reasonably assume have PTSD from dealing with circumstances like this. It was tragic and noteworthy, and ultimately led to charges.
Yes.
Dangerous driving, causing death, and then a trial.
And then a trial. And the trial happened, and the driver who ran a red light was acquitted of dangerous driving. And you and I talked a couple weeks ago on the podcast about how basically anything now can be dangerous driving. But the judge found in this trial that there was no pattern of bad driving. There was a single act. And that single act was not proven beyond a reasonable doubt to have not stemmed from anything other than momentary inattentiveness.
And I think that's important. I think that's an important distinction, because think about, okay, you're driving along and you cross over a double solid line because you decide you're going to pass somebody. That's a single act. It doesn't mean that you did a bunch of things leading up to it, but that's an intentional act of doing something dangerous. And yes, if you cause an accident, there's a very good chance you're going to be charged with dangerous driving and potentially the repercussions of it. in those circumstances. But if you fail to see a stop sign, or you think that there's no stop sign on this intersection, or you are momentarily distracted, or your brain doesn't work for a second, which happens to people, happens to all of us.
Yep.
And driving is something that we do more as habit than anything, where we're not always fully cognizant, because you can't remember the drive when you get to where you've been.
I ran a red light on that same road a couple blocks earlier, but on that same road coming back from when our office was on Beatty, heading home one day, and I just, like, my brain just did not process the light, and somebody slammed on their brakes and honked at me and avoided a collision, thankfully. But yeah, I was just tired.
It happened to me on Pacific.
Yeah.
I think you were in the car. I had that green Acura. I think you and Andy Bonfield were in the car with me. and I...
What a car ride.
Yeah, it was just a traffic light that was a pedestrian light that I'd driven there thousands of times.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never had to stop for it. Suddenly, the light is red, and I didn't realize it, and it was only one of you screaming that got me to stop the car, and I think it was Andy.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wouldn't be me. And be like, ooh, a new traffic.
And it's not like I was driving dangerously. It's not like it was a pattern of behavior. It was just where my brain was at that moment.
Yeah.
And it's very different than my other example of, you know, the intentionally driving over a double solid line to pass.
So people are outraged because of this decision.
Well, people are outraged for all sorts of things, even when there's, you know, the law has fully considered this issue. One would think by now, and probably has, but we don't look at the case law that goes back to 1950. We sort of stop at 1990 for whatever reason. But the, you know, this is not a departure from what you would expect to see in the law.
But people are outraged because specifically, and this is what I want to talk about, because I think we should explain this to people. This person who was accused in this case had a lot of tickets.
A bad driving record, yeah.
And a bad driving record. Now, we don't know what their driving record looks like in its totality, but we do know that the driving record included like 13 convictions over a 10-year period.
Do we know where they got that? Was that from CSO Online?
They went on CSO Online. So
those were ones that they had disputed.
That
doesn't include the ones that they had paid.
Yes. And
so maybe worse, maybe much worse.
Maybe worse. The majority of the tickets were for like non-moving violations, not displaying an N.
I saw
like
a lot of
reducing
no
license
N.
Yep. And unnecessary noise.
And there was a few periods where there was no tickets, and there was a few periods where there was multiple convictions, but they were likely on the same ticket.
And speeding, a lot of speeding convictions. There was an excessive, there were a couple speeding convictions. No red light tickets, though.
Interesting.
Yes. And people are mad. People are like, how can you not say that this person has a pattern of bad driving when they have this evidence? And I don't think people understand that driving record doesn't get admissible in your trial.
Well, it's not just that. The pattern of bad driving is the pattern of bad driving to establish that they are dangerous driving in a manner that's dangerous to the public.
At the time, you can drive terribly one day and great the next day.
Yeah, and if you're driving great the next day and you make some bad calculation, it doesn't mean that it's dangerous driving.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we all make calculations and decisions as we're driving, and we don't always make perfect decisions.
Yeah.
It's a fluid situation.
But your driving record is not admissible against you because it permits the court to engage in, as you know, impermissible propensity reasoning.
And its probative value is so low.
Limited. Especially when there's not even a related offense on there.
Yeah. And its prejudicial effect is terrible because you can see the response. Here's the prejudicial effect right there when you see the way the public views it. That is the prejudicial effect that we are concerned with because it does not give you any information about the incident at hand, but it is highly toxic. It's highly inflammatory, and it's the type of thing that gets people up in arms. So it is not admissible generally. It can be used if he had taken the witness stand and said, I never drive over the speed limit or what have you. But, you know, there's no red light convictions on there. Again, no red light charges that were even acquittals because that's on CSO Online and probably something that the reporters didn't necessarily calculate in. But in the end, of course, it wasn't part of the court record. Would have been on sentencing if he was convicted,
yep,
but wasn't part of the probative aspect of the trial.
Yep.
And to me, I have no problem with it, of course, but the general public, the fact that they get so upset about it just tells you exactly why we don't do it, because they it is inflammatory and not probative.
It's weird. It's weird because, like, law school, basically, like, I didn't recognize this at the time, and probably not even in the early years of my career. I didn't recognize the one benefit that I gained from law school was developing effectively like an intellectual dissonance.
Where you can separate those things so easily. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
But the interesting thing is, in law school, we didn't spend like 16 weeks talking about it. They explained it to you once and you went, oh, okay, yeah.
It was like indoctrination. Well, in a long con way.
Maybe. Yeah, I like that you call it a long con. Think about the first year of law school, and I always think of it as like an immersion language course where you get so much in that first period of time that after that you get nothing. You get nothing. Second and third year, just a waste of time. If you don't get it in the first year, you're not going to get it in the second or the third year.
Yep. All right, Paul.
Time for
the Ridiculous Driver of the Week. The week.
The reviews are in. This book has been a lifesaver. If you haven't bought a copy yet, I can't recommend it enough. Thanks to the Pinpoint Method, I feel like I now have concrete strategies I can employ for difficult situations. Published by LexisNexis, Cross-Examination: The Pinpoint Method is an essential addition to your bookshelf. Order now.
Is it somebody from Florida?
Since we're in Florida,
excellent.
It would only be natural that we would have a person from Florida. Although you found this ridiculous story.
Oh, I know this one.
Yeah.
Okay, I sent it to you.
I would just like to say that I feel like this is a little bit of a cheap shot for how long I've been in Florida, that you picked a Florida woman.
Yes.
Instead of a Florida man.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I also,
personal.
It's also strangely in connection with your Weird and Wacky Wednesdays post this week.
Yes. So I have to say this woman's name because it is glorious. Talen Nichelle Celestine.
Okay.
Is
affected by celestial bodies.
Accused of wounding two drivers on a Florida interstate on Monday. Because she believed that God was telling her to carry out shootings from outside her or inside her vehicle, shooting people because of the solar eclipse.
There you go. So she was getting a message from God. God was speaking to her. You know, lots of people say that they talk to God and that God has spoken to them.
And God said, shoot people.
And God said,
shooting for you.
And here, for some reason, it's not a defense. You know, we had in your Weird and Wacky Wednesdays, there was someone who struck somebody with a Bible in a store. They were buying headphones and got in an argument with somebody there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some people who used their fact that they were pastors to persuade their flock, I guess, the congregation, to invest in a fake cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
There was a third one. I can't remember what it was, but all of them were sort of inspired by God, yet. And of course, we have Bibles in the courtroom, and in the U.S., you know, they have Ten Commandments in front of the courthouse.
Hang on.
I just want to get to the end. When it comes time for people to run the defense of, God told me, nobody seems to buy it. And, you know, I don't know.
Wow.
Maybe God told her. But yes, so the image was like she was shooting at cars. She told people at a motel, God told me that I have to go shoot at people on the highway because of the eclipse.
I mean, to be honest, I was not in the path to totality, but I was in 58% territory, and I did feel the overwhelming urge to shoot up cars.
Did you? Okay, well, fair enough.
But God,
that was an overwhelming urge, but you didn't hear God talking.
It was God talking to me. I saw a burning bush and everything.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, I just, we have Bibles in court and we swear on the Bible, and we have, God is mentioned in all sorts of government documents all over the place in Canada and the U.S. Yet when it comes time to run your defense, nobody wants to believe that God told you to do it, despite the fact that all the religious books are based on people having God told them to do it, which I find kind of somewhat ironic and slightly entertaining. And I always wonder about people who are triers of fact, so a jury or a judge, when they're religious and they are confronted with this God told me to do it defense, that suddenly they don't accept it. But that's pretty ridiculous.
And that's our podcast. So if you have a driving law related issue, you can find us online at vancouvercriminallaw.com. And if God told you to do something and now you're in trouble, you can give us a call at 604-685-8889 and tune in next week for another exciting episode of Driving Law.
Plus, God wants you to listen to the podcast.